The Golden Age of Radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the Golden Age of Radio, music and comedy with the Henry Morgan Show. Edward R. Murrow has a report from London during the spring of 1941, and movie stuntman Cecil Kellogg is featured on the Daredevils of Hollywood. Stay tuned for the Golden Age of Radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, Edward R. Murrow has a report from London during the spring of 1941, and movie stuntman Cecil Kellogg is featured on the Daredevils of Hollywood. Right now, music and comedy with the Henry Morgan Show, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
The Henry Morgan Show? Eversharp, manufacturers of Eversharp Chic Injector Razors and Blades, brings you the Henry Morgan Show, featuring Bernie Green and his orchestra and a few surprises.
Good evening, anybody. Here's Morgan. Thank you very much. A lot of people have asked how we make up jokes for this program, and a lot of people have asked why we don't. Of course, humor today is big business, and it can't be run in a slipshod way like housing or California divorces. It takes a lot of planning. Now, many people think that jokes are made up on the spur of the moment right after some story breaks in the newspapers, and that's not so. The joke is written first. Well, that's true. After it's made up, the joke is put in the icebox so it won't rot and is brought out at the proper time. Of course, sometimes you reach in for a joke and come out with an egg. Let me show you how this happens. A couple of months ago, we were talking about this program and one of the actors said...
Hey, Henry, I got a great topical joke.
What's the joke, Brewster?
Well, we wait until Oregon has two governors at the same time, see? And then you say to
me... Wait a minute. How could Oregon have two governors?
How do I know how? I just say it might happen, and where will it be then?
Well, I have a lot of eyebrow jokes ready.
You mean in...
Yeah, in case of a coal strike.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm all set. But I think you ought to forget that two governors business. That's impossible.
Impossible? That's what you said about the ballpoint pen.
Yeah.
So what happens?
Yeah.
So they invent the ballpoint pen, so Fred Allen has a new one to order joke every week, and you don't even have one damp joke.
Well, I had a joke about a typewriter that writes under wood.
That's not the point.
You didn't wait for that, oh... Look, I had a joke about, there was one about a pen with a matzo ball point that would write under chicken soup.
Hey, Murgatroyd.
Yeah?
Remember I told him back in 44 that Truman would be elected vice president and he played the piano?
Yeah, and Morgan didn't believe it. Henry Wallace, he kept saying. Making up Henry Wallace jokes that we finally had a load in boxcars and sell cheap to Westbrook Pegler.
Yeah. Let's make up some football fix jokes, I kept saying. Come on, let's all make up some football fix jokes.
And what's he say? He says he wants to make up jokes about the eternal bachelor. He'll always be a bachelor, Morgan says. So 50 jokes he makes up about Leo DeRocha.
Don't worry about that. We may still be able to use them.
Football fix jokes, I told him.
I should have made that a Lorraine Day joke. I could have done a lot better.
Well, I told him about basketball fix, football fix, prize fight fix jokes I told him.
All this week I've been telling him smog jokes, smog jokes.
Fellas, what do we want with smog jokes?
Suppose they move the program to California.
Yeah, I guess if I had some smog jokes ready, they'd call me a pretty smog operator.
Well, how about this two governors of Oregon business before it's too late?
Well, if you think it could happen in this country,
I just got a feeling, that's all. Go ahead.
So, I made up 37 jokes about Oregon's having two governors, and you know what happened. Georgia has two governors, and every other program has a joke ready, not us. I even had some set up for the Carolinas. Like, did you hear what the two governors of North Carolina said to the two governors of South Carolina? Stuff like that. Had a lot of it. The reason I'm telling you all this is about 2 months ago, I made the worst mistake of my life. I really guessed wrong. You see, Brewster came up to me and he said...
Hey, Henry, I got a great idea for a joke. Look, suppose somebody writes a song called Open a Door, Rick...
That's impossible. And now, in answer to many requests that we might get, here is... or here are the Elm City Four. Here is, here are. Here is the Elm City Four singing Under the Bamboo Tree.
If you like a me like I like a you, and we like them both the same, I like to say this very day, I like to change your name. Cause I love you and love you true, and if you will love me, one lives two lives one, under the bamboo tree. Down in the jungle lived a maid, of royal blood though dusky shade. A marked impression once she made upon a Zulu from Matabulu. And every morning he would be down underneath a bamboo tree, awaiting there his love to see. And then to her he'd sing, if you like a me like I like a you, and we like a both the same, I like to say this very day, I like to change your name. Cause I love you and love you too, and if you will love me, one lives two lives one, under the bamboo tree. If you like me like I like you, and we like both the same, I like to say this very day, I like to change your name. Cause I love you and love you too, and if you will love me, one lives two lives one, under the bamboo tree.
Tonight, the Eversharp Company, manufacturer of Eversharp Chick Injector Razors and Blades, have kindly consented to reduce the length of the commercial announcements by between 1 and 2 seconds. Eversharp likes to explain the way the razor works by having people go around saying push-pull, click-click. But I think it'd be more effective if you could actually hear this handy little gadget. So tonight we're going to make the sounds for you. The Eversharp Chick Injector Razor, of course, changes blades automatically. You take the razor in one hand, the injector cartridge in the other, and then just push. Then you just pull. Then just click, click. Works very simply. And you get the razor and 20 blades for $1.25. And the sponsor always thanks me for the commercial announcement. I think I owe him one Eversharp. Well, I said it. For a long time, I've been thinking about getting an insurance policy. Not so much that I've been thinking about it, but I know an insurance agent, and he's been thinking about it. This is the way it happened. A couple of weeks ago, as I came out of the studio after broadcast, I met this agent who'd been in the audience, and I said, "Hello, Harvey, I see you just came out of the show."
Yeah.
Well, how'd you like it?
Very good.
Thanks.
Henry.
Yes?
You need insurance. Like, I'm your friend. Don't let another program... I mean, another week go by.
I shouldn't, huh?
Listen, face the fact. You know how many ways there are to die.
Your company sells them?
Why, Henry, there's death by strangulation, death by asphyxiation, death by accidental shooting, death by on-purpose shooting, death by hanging, death by poisoning, and, if you'll pardon the expression, you could drop dead.
Well, that's probably just for poor people.
There's death from floods, hurricanes, tornadoes, typhoons, death by falling from heights, death by heights falling on you.
No wonder anybody's alive.
There's death from sulfuric acid, hydrochloric acid, acetic acid, acid stomach, acid indigestion, and acid.
I never touch the stuff myself.
Well, Henry, you can't be lucky forever.
Yes,
and it's not only you. Something could happen to your wife. Something could happen to your wife's mother.
How much does that cost? Anyway, after he got through talking, I didn't feel too well. And who was I to fight the insurance trust? But I couldn't get the policy until I'd seen the insurance company doctor.
Well, Mr. Gorgon, what are you here for?
Morgan, and I'm interested in a 20-year endowment policy.
Oh, yes. Take off your clothes.
Well, okay.
Now put them back on.
Well, aren't you going to examine me?
Oh, no, I just wanted to see you tie that bow tie.
Oh, I see.
Now, let me see. I ought to ask you something. Oh, yeah. Do you suffer from headaches?
Yes.
You, too? Oh, my headaches are killing me. My back's been bothering me for years. Every spring and every fall, I get the grip and my foot hurts. I wish I knew a good doctor.
Jesus,
but tell me, Mr. Organ.
Morgan.
Yes, of course. Tell me, Mr. Gordon, do you have any trouble with your internal Morgans?
Just in the gas pipes.
Oh, yes, in the gas pipes. Well, now, let's see. You ought to do something else. Stick your tongue out.
Yes?
Oh, my. What is wrong with your tongue?
Nothing. Nothing at all. Nothing wrong with my tongue.
Well, then, why do you talk so funny?
They caught my tongue out. Has Doc.
Yes?
Can I throw it back in now?
Well, all right, but the way you talk, I'm sure you're not normal.
Am I through now?
Oh, no. Oh, my, no. No, they make me give you a blood test.
They make you. Don't you want to?
Oh, no. The sight of blood makes me faint.
Never mind, Doctor. My blood was tested.
Well, how did it make out?
It failed in spelling. Am I through now, Doctor?
Well, just one or two questions. Do you have an involuntary thrombosis or a deviated septum?
Gosh, no. I can't afford things like that.
I'll give you a break. I'll put down yes. Do you have a nervous disorder?
I'm getting one.
Oh, that's good. Do you have neuritis, arthritis, sciatica, lumbago, or gout? Choose one.
Well, I finally passed and went back to the insurance agent to get my policy, and he said...
Well, Henry, tell you what kind of policy I'd like to see you have. That 20-payment life.
What's that?
After 20 payments, you get a year's subscription to life.
Well, let me look at the policy, will you? Oh, say, this looks pretty good. Here in paragraph 34, section 91, it says, I get $10,000 in case of snow blindness, provided I live in Miami. That's pretty good. Section 81 says, I'm guaranteed against harpooning while in swimming. Happens every day. Says here, if the George Washington Bridge caves in while I'm on it, the company repairs my car. Nice. It's a big comfort. I see, though, I'm not covered in case of baldness.
Who is?
Yes,
I hope you notice paragraph 91. You get a $50 bonus for triplets after the third set.
Grand. Say, tell me something. What happens if I get in an accident?
You may get killed.
Well, what happens if I get sick?
We pay you $100 a week for 6 weeks.
Well, what if I get out of bed before the 6 weeks?
Why should you?
We're all set now. I like that. That's pretty good.
We're all set now, Morgan. Who's your second beneficiary?
What did you say, sir?
We're all set now. who is your second beneficiary?
My second beneficiary? Who's my first beneficiary?
The president of our company. Will you meet him, Henry? You'll be crazy about him.
He sounds delightful. I'd be glad to leave my money to him.
Most wonderful of all, Henry. The death benefit for this policy pays so much money that you'll be able to retire for the rest of your life.
I'll take it.
Hello.
Hello, Hortense. This is Gerard.
Hello, Gerard. This is Hortense.
Hey, what are you doing tonight, Hortense, honey?
Don't Hortense, honey, me. I'm mad on you.
You are? What did I do?
You don't even know what you did?
No.
That even makes it worse.
What did I do?
What did I do?
Hey, wait. You mean because I called your father a stingy old sourpuss?
Well, that was
nothing. It's only a figure of speech.
That is not the reason. But I didn't know you called my father a stingy old sourpuss.
What are you picking on me for, Hortense? Everybody says so, even your own mother says...
Oh, Gerard, now I begin to see you for what you are. You know what? You're dangerous.
Me? Hey, but wait. If you're not mad about that, for heaven's sakes, what are you mad at me for?
You know.
I know, and I know.
Ha, ha, ha.
Tell me!
I never want to talk to you again. Goodbye.
Me neither. Goodbye.
Hello.
Well, Hortense, this is Gerard.
Who?
Gerard. Hey, what do you mean, who?
Oh, Gerard. Hello, Gerard.
Well?
Well?
What are you mad at me for?
Well, it's because what you did to me.
What did I do? What did I do, for goodness sake?
You apologize?
Yes.
What for? Remember when we went skating on Monday?
Yeah.
And I tripped over someone and took that terrible flop?
Yeah.
You didn't even pick me up.
Well, gee whiz, Hortense, who do you think you tripped over?
Oh, was that you, Gerard? Oh, I didn't know. But anyway, I'm still mad.
What for?
When that crowd gathered and the doctor came, you didn't even have the decency to take me home.
Well, for goodness sakes, Hortense, who do you think the doctor was examining?
Oh, my apologies, Gerard. Do you feel better?
Oh, much better.
That's good. Why don't you come over tonight and we'll sit in my parlor?
I'm still not allowed to sit.
That's too bad. Anyway, we're not mad on each other anymore.
I wasn't mad on you, Hortense. You were mad on me.
Well, you didn't even bother to explain.
What is there to explain? You fell on me.
At least you could have called me up.
I did call you up just now. You were mad on me.
Well, what did you have to scream for? Can't you talk like a human being?
Look who's talking about who's a human being. She hollers, she yells, she dodges me.
Oh, shut up.
Hortense, I don't ever want to talk to you again. Is that understood?
I acquiesce.
Strange Men of History.
In the year 1821, a 19-year-old immigrant boy came to this country from Slovenia. He arrived with only 13 zagrebs in his pocket, which was equal to about 65 shillings in English money. But he was in the United States. He was about a buck and a half. He had no friends, no relatives, couldn't speak a word of English. And yet, in 25 short years, he was completely broke. Aside from the fact that no picture of him remains, nothing is known about him at all. About the only thing we do know for sure is that he never even suspected that someday Bernie Green and his orchestra would play a peachy arrangement of The Peanut Vendor. Thank you. familiar with the fiery pep talks which football coaches give their teams between halves. And we thought it might be interesting to listen to an English rugby coach pleading with his team to die for dear old Watsis. So we take you now to a stadium just outside London, England, for the annual game between Furrow and Marrow. It's halftime, and in the Furrow dressing room, Coach Thrasylwaite Morgan is screaming his team up to a fighting pitch.
Gentlemen, I don't know quite how to tell you this,
but the score isn't particularly invigorating. As a matter of fact, it's a shade disheartening. 85-3. I mean, after all, we're not ahead. Feels to me our showing isn't strong. Ought to win one, you know. I owe it to alma mater, blood, sweat, all that sort of rot, you know. I... I thank you so much. Thumbs up. Thumbs up, lads. Now then, you, where's your thumb?
I'm terribly sorry, sir. It's on the playing field.
Then I suggest you jolly well trot right out and retrieve it. No excuse for untidiness, you know. My maternal grandmother, did before your time, of course. One of the least tidy women in Lancashire. I make no brief for her, none at all. Now then, chaps, I checked the records of the visiting team. Nothing formidable, actually. Their right forward, Griggs. No breeding. Father's in trade, I believe. Doesn't hold a snivet to our lad Wheatley here.
Rather!
And who? You, Godowski. We're counting on you for brawn, old boy. Get your head into it, won't you? Dislike putting you lads on the griddle like this, but this sort of showing just won't pass muster. Reminds me, elderly gentleman dining at the club yesterday asked me to pass the muster. Sorry. Now, what say, lads? Mustn't look so futile out there.
Rather!
Ought to score at least one before the fog lifts.
Rather!
Now then, here's how we do it.
Here!
Rather expected a rather. Now, Priestley, next time you get possession, you're to kick to Beastley. No, you kick to Beastly, then Beastly, you're to kick to Priestley. Or I mean to say Priestley. Tell you what, suppose we do it alphabetically. Beastly, you kick to Priestley. Priestley, you kick to Beastly. And you, Beastly, you, Beastly. However did you come to such an atrocious muffler as you're wearing? Very poor taste. What sort of impression can this team hope to make if our left wing dresses like a member of the House of Commons? Priestley, don't kick the ball to Priestley. He doesn't deserve it. Kick it to someone worthy. Oh, time's up, lads. There's the whistle. Now then, let's trot out there and give those whippersnappers from Marrow a taste of what for. Oh, what? Wrong dressing room, you say? This is Marrow?
Rather!
Well, no matter. No harm done. Carry on, lads.
Ladies and gentlemen, the world's greatest announcer, Ted Husing, and the world's worst commercial, the Shave-a-Thon.
Thank you very much for those kind words, Henry. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Again tonight, we bring you the world-famous Eversharp Schick Shave-a-Thon, the most daring demonstration ever conducted by any razor. Right before this microphone, in full view of our studio audience, we will now conduct another actual shaving contest, which proves week after week that Eversharp Schick Injector Razor gives the world's quickest, easiest, cleanest shave. Last week, an Eversharp Schick user whisked in the winner in the sizzling time of 20 seconds. Tonight, we have six more contestants picked at random from the studio audience. Three men from New York, one from California, Ohio, and Canada. Now, three of these men are going to shave with the Eversharp Schick Injector Razors. Three are going to use other well-known safety razors. Who's going to win tonight's big shave-a-thon? Well, here the contestants are now out on the stage. They're all lathered up. They're at the post. They're waiting for the signal, and here it is. And now they're off. And again, tonight's big shave-a-thon is on. These six shavers up here tonight on the stage are now getting their razors ready. Say, look at those men with the Eversharp Schick. One after another, they're already out in front because with the automatic blade changer, there's no blade to unwrap. All you do is pull, push, click, click, and there's a blade all ready to shave. You're fast, you set it. Smooth, right again. Easy, same as Richard Romp with this razor. Who's that fellow out there in front? An Eversharp Schick user naturally. He's half shaved already. And that's a wonderful, close, clean shave he's getting. And gentle strokes to one side of his face is as thick as a billiard ball. And there goes the bell. And here again is tonight's winner. Once again, it's an Eversharp Schick user. And since Charlie Irving isn't here, I'll tell you who it is myself. It is Mr. Gregory, and the time is 25 seconds. Well, congratulations, Mr. Gregory. Now you have actual proof, ladies and gentlemen, that with an Eversharp Schick, you not only shave faster and easier, but your face feels smoother and more comfortable. You can feel the difference, you bet. No sting, no pull. Yes, folks, for the world's quickest, easiest, cleanest shave, use an Eversharp Schick injector razor. Thank you, Henry.
People. Oh, that's your line, Charlie.
Well, people are asking more questions today than ever before.
I like this.
But then they're getting fewer answers. In an effort to alleviate this shortage of answers, we bring you the man who knows everything, the Question Man. And here he is, the Question Man.
Good evening.
Our first question, sir, comes from Mrs. F.S. of Oberlin, Ohio, who asks, should olives be eaten with the fingers?
No, the fingers should be eaten separately.
Our next question comes from Mrs. J.E. of Nantasket, who inquires, how do you prepare chestnut stuffing?
Send for my free booklet entitled, How to Stuff a Chestnut. Merely enclose $2 to cover cost of covering costs.
A bachelor of Louisville, Kentucky writes, I often hear people say, two can live as cheap as one. What does this mean?
Nothing.
And Miss J.L. of Cincinnati wants to know, who wrote The Tale of Two Cities?
I'm afraid Miss J.L. will have to be more specific. Which two cities?
Our next question comes from Miss J.K. of Utica, New York. She asks, what does the expression habeas corpus refer to?
This refers to an old Latin expression.
Our next question comes from Mr. C.M. of Medfield, Mass., who writes, is it true that the sum of the interior angles of a triangle is always equal to two right angles?
No. Speaker Hooper and Lewis comprised the Boston outfield at that time. The first baseman to whom you refer was undoubtedly George Sisler.
And our last question, sir, comes from Mrs. L.T. of Salt Lake City, who says, my husband claims he can determine a horse's age by examining his teeth. Is this true?
No. Your husband should examine the horse's teeth.
Thank you, sir. That was the Question Man, brought to you every so often as a public service. Eversharp, manufacturers of Eversharp Schick injector razors and blades, invite you to tune in same time, same station next week when Eversharp will again bring you the Henry Morgan Show. They're yours again, Eversharp Schick Injector Blades, for the world's fastest, safest, smoothest shave. Just insert the automatic blade changer in your Eversharp Schick Injector Razor, push, pull, click, click, and you're ready to shave. 20 blades, 75 cents at good stores everywhere. This is Charles Irving saying goodnight for Eversharp. Anytime. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio in an episode of the Henry Morgan Show. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s. When the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. In a moment, movie stuntman Cecil Kellogg is featured on the Daredevils of Hollywood. Right now, Edward R. Murrow has a CBS radio report on London from March 9, 1941, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
This is London. Soon it will be spring in England. Already there are flowers in the parks, although the parks aren't quite as well kept as they were at this time last year. The winter that is ending has been hard, but Londoners have many reasons for satisfaction. There have been no serious epidemics. The casualties from air bombardment have been less than expected. And London meets this spring with as much courage, though less complacency, than at this time last year. The other day, watching a farmer trying to fill in a 20-foot deep bomb crater in the middle of his field, I wondered what would happen before he harvested the next crop from that bomb-torn soil. I suppose that many more bombs will fall. There'll be much talk about equality of sacrifice, which doesn't exist. Many proud ships will certainly perish in the western approaches. There'll be further restrictions on clothes and food. Probably a few profiteers will make their profits. No one knows whether invasion will come, but there are those who fear it will not. I believe that a public opinion poll on the question, would you like the Germans to attempt an invasion, would be answered overwhelmingly in the affirmative. Most people, believing that it must be attempted eventually, would be willing to have it come soon. They think that in no other way can the Germans win this war, and they will not change their minds until they hear their children say, we are hungry. So long as Winston Churchill is Prime Minister, the House of Commons will be given an opportunity to defend its traditions and to determine the character of the government that is to rule this country. The Prime Minister will continue to be criticized in private for being too much interested in strategy and too little concerned with the great social and economic problems that clamor for solution. British propaganda aimed at occupied countries will continue to fight without its heavy artillery until some sort of statement on war aims, or if you prefer, peace aims, has been published. And in the future, as in the past, one of the strangest sensations for me will be that produced by radio. Sometime, someone will write the story of the technical and military uses to which this new weapon has been put. But no one, I think, will ever describe adequately just what it feels like to sit in London with German bombs ripping through the air, shaking the buildings, and causing the lights to flicker, while you listen to the German radio broadcasting Wagner or Bavarian folk music. A twist of the dial gives you Tokyo talking about dangerous thoughts, an American senator discussing hemisphere defense, the clipped, precise accent of a British announcer describing the proper method of photographing elephants, Moscow boasting of the prospects of the wheat harvest in the Ukraine, each nation speaking almost any language save its own, until finally you switch off the receiving set in order that the sounds from the four corners of the earth will not interfere with the sound of the German bombs that come close enough to cause you to dive under the desk. The bombs this spring will be bigger, and there'll be more of them, probably dropped from a greater height than ever before. Berlin and London will continue to claim that their bombs hit military targets, while the enemies strike mainly churches, schools, hospitals, and private dwellings. The opening engagement of the spring campaign is now being fought in the Atlantic. The Admiralty has taken over control of the shipyards in an effort to speed up production and repairs. Merchant sinkings will probably reach alarming proportions, but there will always be men to take the ships out. The outcome of the battle in the Atlantic will be decisive. This island lives by its ships, and the ships will be carrying supplies from America. There was no dancing in the streets here when the lease and land bill was passed, for the British know from their own experience that the gap between legislation and realization can be very wide. They remember being told that their frontier was on the Rhine, and they know now that their government did very little to keep it there. The course of Anglo-American relations will be smooth on the surface, but many people over here will express regret that they believe America is making the same mistakes that Britain made. For you must understand that the idea of America being of more help as a non-belligerent than as a fighting ally has been discarded. even by those who advanced it originally. Maybe we shall hear some frank, forthright talk across the Atlantic instead of rhetoric. But I doubt it. One thing that is not to be doubted is that the decisions taken in Washington between now and the time the crops are harvested will determine the pattern of events for a long time to come. British statesmen are fond of repeating that Britain stands alone as the defender of democracy and decency. But General Headquarters is now on Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C. Many Britishers realize that. Not all of them are happy about it. For the policies of Washington have not always been the policies of the Tory Party, which still rules this country. Presumably, the decisions of Washington will be taken in the full light of publicity and debate. No mere radio reporter has the right to use the weight of monopolized opportunity in an effort to influence those decisions. We can only deliver to you an occasional wheelbarrow load of stuff, tell you where it comes from, what sort of air raid shelter or bastion you build with it, is a matter for free men to decide. But since part of reporting must necessarily be personal, I'd like to end this with my own impression of Britain on the verge of spring and big events. There's still a sense of humor in the country. The old feeling of superiority over all other peoples remains. So does class distinction. There is great courage and a blind belief that Britain will survive. The British aren't all heroes. They know the feeling of fear. I've shared it with them. They try to avoid thinking deeply about political and social problems. They'll stand any amount of government inefficiency and muddle. They're slow to anger, and they die with great dignity. They will cheer Winston Churchill when he walks through block after block of smashed houses and offices as though he brought them a great victory. During a blinding raid, when the streets are full of smoke and the sound of the roaring guns, they'll say to you, "Do you think we're really brave or just lacking in imagination?" Well, they've come through the winter. They've been warned that the testing days are ahead. Of the past months, they may well say, we have lived a life, not an apology. And of the future, I think most of them would say, we shall live hard, but we shall live.
Man, it's Tessa's Torch Song, a lovelorn lament you'll hear Dinah Shore sing in Samuel Goldwyn's new Technicolor musical comedy, Up in Arms. What do you say, Dinah?
Mm-hmm. It's one of the best. A song that goes way down deep and comes out solid blues. I certainly go for it.
Yes, and it certainly goes for Dinah Shore. You'll agree when you hear her give out with it in the year's sprightliest film musical comedy, Up in Arms.
And in addition, you'll have the real treat of seeing Broadway's greatest comic artist, Danny Kaye, make his motion picture debut in a riotous film offering of melody, merriment, and uproarious entertainment. So make a date now for the musical comedy of the year, Up in Arms.
From Hollywood, the motion picture capital of the world, we bring you the thrilling, true-life experiences of those men behind the scenes, those daring, unsung heroes whose breathtaking adventures on the screen have thrilled millions, whose daily jobs bring them face-to-face with death, those men who comprise the strangest fraternity on Earth, the Suicide Squad, the movie stuntmen, the Daredevils of Hollywood.
Ladies and gentlemen, in presenting this copyrighted radio feature, we are privileged to have as our guest one of the top-notch stuntmen of Hollywood, Cecil Kellogg. It is through his cooperation that we are able to reenact some of the highlights of his dangerous profession. The thrilling scenes you are about to hear are his own actual experiences. Mr. Kellogg is here in the studio right now, and later in the program we will bring him to the microphone. But first, come with us as we turn back the calendar and witness some of the thrills which to him are all in a day's work.
At a small-town railroad station in Southern California, a special train is just pulling in. It is early morning. The station agent, with wide-eyed interest, watches the unusual passengers alighting from the train. Presently, a well-dressed man approaches him with a friendly greeting.
Hello there, Dad. You the station manager?
Yeah. Well, ain't nobody else, son. And I'll bet you them pitcher fellas is coming on down here, huh?
That's right, Dad. You knew we were coming, eh?
Oh, sure. The dispatcher called me on the telephone this morning. Gonna make a picture, are you?
Yes, that's the general idea.
Hey, say, this town's having a real boom. Lots of excitement already. See, we ain't never had a picture made here before.
Well, that's good. I hope everyone enjoys it. Oh, by the way, where's the best place to get some breakfast?
Well, there ain't but one place, and it's just across the street over there.
Oh, I see. Do they serve good food?
Well, son, if they don't, just think what I've been going through here for 25 years.
I'll bet it's fine. I'll try it anyway.
Are you going in for breakfast, Mr. Kimball?
Oh, hello, Cecil. I didn't see you.
What'll it be this morning?
Oh, I think I'll have some ham and eggs and coffee.
Make mine the same, please.
Two orders of ham and eggs. Thank you.
Now, here's the idea in a nutshell, Cecil. A passenger train passes the station platform at about 15 miles an hour.
I see. And what do I do?
You jump onto the train from the platform.
Well, that's easy enough.
Then you climb up on top of the passenger train. By the time you're up there, she's picked up pretty good speed.
And then?
Well, now, by this time, the passenger train is pulled alongside a freight train, which is going in the same direction about the same speed.
I get it. They're alongside each other on double tracks.
That's it, exactly. Now, here's what you do. You see, Cecil, this freight train is supposed to be running away. You do a transfer from the passenger train to the freight.
I understand. The story is that I get on the freight train and stop it. Is that right?
That's the idea. You see, then there's another train coming from the opposite direction on the same track the freight is running on. You're supposed to avert a head-on collision.
And thereby save the girl, I suppose.
That's right. Well, how does it sound?
All right, gents, here you are. Two orders, ham and eggs.
Well, to tell the truth, Mr. Kimball, what the cook just said sounds better to me right now.
And now, 3 hours later, we find the picture company ready to shoot this dangerous scene. The prospect of that hazardous leap from the top of one fast-moving train to another has been drilling qualms into Cecil Kellogg's head for 2 hours. His nerves are tense. Anxious to get the scene made, he stands on the station platform, puffing a cigarette, awaiting his cue. Hurried glances seek him out. Will he make the jump, or will he, at the last moment, refuse to do it? And now the crucial moment has arrived. The director and his assistant have placed themselves with the camera cue atop one of the boxcars. Everything is in readiness.
Ready to roll?
Yep, let's go. All right, everybody. Here we go. There's Cecil down there, standing on the edge of the platform. Looks like he's all set. Okay, boys, turn him over. And keep grinding, no matter what happens.
Picking up speed pretty fast.
Yep. Here we come to the platform. Cecil's getting ready to jump on. There he goes.
That was a clean shot.
Hey, this rattler can really travel.
Yeah. Look down the track. There's the freight. She's loping along, waiting for us.
He won't have to wait long. Look at Cecil. He's climbing up the side. Now there he's on top of the coach just ahead of us. We're overtaking the freight train. Well, look, both trains are picking up speed.
We haven't got much more speed to gain. Must be making about 45 now.
Keep those cameras going, boys. He's getting ready to jump.
See, that wind is about to blow him off of there. That's all he can do to stand up.
I'm perfectly satisfied so far. He's doing a swell job.
We've about got our speed.
How does it look in the cameras, boys?
It's terrific, Mr. Kimball.
All right, now this is it. Give him the signal to jump. There he goes.
Oh, boy, look at him leap across there.
He landed on top of the freight. Great guns, he fell down.
He's about to roll off.
Look out, Cecil. He held on. He made it. He's all right now. Oh, man, what a relief. And what a shot.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is our pleasure to present the daring stuntman who made that thrilling scene, whose job takes him day after day into the very jaws of death. It is with pride that we are able to introduce Cecil Kellogg, interviewed by Glenn Hardy.
Well, Cecil, that one almost took my breath away. Say, boy, that certainly was a thriller.
It kind of had me going for a minute.
Well, tell me, Cecil, were you scared when you fell and almost rolled off that train?
Well, they may sound funny to you, but I wasn't scared. At least not then.
No?
My mind was clear as a bell. I never thought faster or more clearly than I did right then.
And how did you feel when it was all over?
I was limp as a rag.
I'll bet you were. Now, look, Cecil, are you on call at all the studios?
No. I'm under exclusive contract to Universal.
But here's something else I'm interested in, Cecil. Do you fellows go in much for, well, good luck pieces and things like that?
Oh, I think many of the stuntmen do carry little trinkets of one kind or another just for luck. Here's a pocket piece that I'm rather fond of.
Hey, that certainly is a dandy little gadget, isn't it? See, this is really clever.
I'll tell you what I'll do, Glenn. If you'll promise to carry this lucky piece with you always, I'll give it to you.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Cecil. That may have sounded like a pretty broad hint on my part, but It really wasn't meant that way at all. Well, I wouldn't think of taking your good luck piece from you.
Well, I really want you to have it. Just promise that you'll always carry it with you.
Well, all right if you insist, Cecil. I promise, and you may know that I'll consider it a prized possession. Thanks a million. But now to get back to some more questions. Isn't timing very important in your work?
Yes, it is. As an instance here, take that buckboard stunt I did a few years ago. A quick decision there probably saved not only my life, but two others as well. It was on location up at Chatsworth. The idea was a runaway in a buckboard. A man and a woman were supposed to be in the rig. My job was to ride up alongside the team on my horse and do a transfer. Get a hold of the reins and stop the team. You know, a rescue. Now, the only horses available that day were a couple of pretty wild ponies that had never been worked before. And I was a little skeptical about the whole thing to begin with. Now, look, Bob, those horses are too frisky for this run. They've never done this sort of thing before. There may be trouble.
Oh, I think Charlie can hold them all right. He's a pretty good driver. Besides, there aren't any more horses we can use.
Oh, don't you think we'd better wait until tomorrow to make the shot? We can get some other horses in the morning.
No, Cecil, it's getting late. We really should get this shot today.
Well, that's okay with me, Mr. Blackwell. I can take care of myself, all right. I was just thinking of the other people.
I know, but we have every reason to believe that everything will be okay. Just do your best, Cecil, and give me this shot.
Okay, let's go.
All right, everybody. This is a take. Quiet, please. This is it. Places. Quiet. Quiet, please. Now, look, Cecil. The rig will be heading for that big hole down there, right beside the trees. It's about 7 feet deep.
I see. And I stop the runaway horses before they get there, if I'm able.
That's it. All right, let's go.
Hey, Charlie. Hold them back as much as you can. Now, don't give them the line.
Okay, Cecil.
All right, go ahead, boys. Camera. Say, looks as though Charlie gave them their heads. They're really running away.
Yes, I'm afraid Cecil was right.
He's having a hot, tough time catching them.
But he's gaining on them.
They're headed straight for that big hole.
Hurry, Cecil! Get up there, boy!
He's about to catch them. He's crawling over. There's the transfer.
Yes, but he's too late. They're going right into that hole.
Good grief, look at that.
Watch it! Look out!
Hey, Cecil, that must have been pretty bad. Did anyone get hurt there?
Oh, yes, we were all bruised up pretty badly. There's no bones broken, though. But it was a mean spill.
Well, you didn't have much time to do anything with those horses, did you?
No, I had to work fast. You see, they were headed straight for the center of that hole, and if they'd run into it that way, well, the rig would have crashed right on top of Charlie and the woman.
I see, and how did you prevent that?
Well, I pulled the horses to one side, and we crashed into the edge of the hole. You see, that threw Charlie and the woman clear. Otherwise, they would probably have been killed.
Well, I take it that you had to make the scene over next day after all.
You're right. And this time we used the horses that were trained in that kind of work.
And I guess everything went off smoothly.
Yep, slick as a whistle.
Well, Cecil, you stuntmen certainly have some tough jobs to do, but still it must be very fascinating.
Yeah, it's fascinating, but there's a lot of grief in stunt work. No glory and a lot of hard work. It pays big money, all right, but it's a tough business to learn. And you take the chance of being crippled for life while you're getting the hang of it.
I'll bet you do. Well, Cecil, we've enjoyed your visit very much. And on behalf of our listeners, I want to sincerely thank you for coming here. I know that everyone joins me in hoping that we may have you on this program again very soon. Take it easy, old man, and the best of luck.
Golly, what a wallop! He rang the bell again!
He's feeling his Cheerios. Yes, Cheerios, that energizing breakfast cereal made from oats. Good, old-fashioned, nourishing oats, all ready to eat. Cheerios gives you a kind of nourishment that really counts. Cheerios is a cereal that really helps you build up strength and energy. So for your better breakfast, always start with Cheerios. C-H-E-E-R-I-O-S. Cheerios.
Molly, her cheeks are rosy red, her lips are soft as satin, and they taste like gingerbread. Ho, 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 me, oh my, Miss Molly, I'm in love with you. Oh me, oh my, Miss Molly, won't you say you love me too?
Oh, Jody.
Now when Miss Molly's smiling, the sun is dim a spell. And when she laughs, her voice is like a little silver bell. Ho, 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 me, oh my, Miss Molly, I'm in love with you. Oh, me, oh, my, Miss Molly, won't you say you love me too? Driving, I'll resign.
Talk on, brother.
If only Miss Molly will say that she'll be mine. Ho, 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 me, oh, my, Miss Molly, I'm in love with you. Oh, me, oh, my, Miss Molly, won't you say you love me too?
Now, do it.
Now listen, dear Miss Molly, I've told you this before, but even though I've told you so, I'll tell you just once more. Ho, 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 me, oh my, Miss Molly, I'm in love with you. Oh, me, oh my, Miss Molly, won't you say you love me too?
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY, Bob Wills and his Texas Playboys with Miss Molly from 1942. We also enjoyed the Daredevils of Hollywood, featuring a profile of stuntman Cecil Kellogg, and Edward R. Murrow reported on London for CBS Radio, first broadcast on March 9, 1941. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows, on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.